Hello, Jasons and Melissas, and welcome back to the fourth and final season of Rewatching Home Movies, a weekly watch-along podcast where three friends break down the 1999 animated series Home Movies. My name is Tim, and I'm obsessed with home movies.
My name's Adele, and I am a home movies newbie.
My name is Marson, and I've never seen home movies.
Home Movies, the entire series, plus an interview with Damon Wong, plus something else?
Something else.
Oh my God, guys, I forgot to tell you, there's something else.
There's something else.
But we'll get to that when we get to that. Hey, friends, it is this. I think this is going to be the last Home Movies recap episode that we release. We're going to talk about basically the entire series and podcast. We had an interview drop with Damon Wong that I'm very excited to talk about. And then I got a nice little surprise for us at the end. So let's get into it, shall we?
Yes.
We shall.
So real quick, I showed Nick the finale.
The edited one?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. I'm not sure if I, yeah, for the audience, I cut together the finale episode, but I took the part where it like cuts jarring to like the down, 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 and just had it very wistful. I even had to go back and cut the credits together just because I wanted Nick to have like a better experience with the actual episode. And I thought I did a good job. I personally would watch that version than I would watch the other one that's very jarring. But I showed Nick they weren't ready. They weren't ready.
No.
And
what was their reaction?
They had a very similar reaction to what we had originally. Like in the beginning, they're like, I kind of hate that. I think I hate that episode. What the fuck?
I think without the ability to kind of sit down and unpack it with a couple friends for 90 minutes afterwards, because I do remember when we got done watching that episode, you guys were mad.
I believe I said, what the fuck, Tim?
Yeah. And I was like, I'm sorry, I did write and edit this last episode. So that is on me.
I love when you said, what the fuck, Tim, because you were angry and Tim was crying.
I'm like, you're right. I fucked up on this one, guys.
Sorry I made you do a whole podcast.
It's all come down to this.
Yeah.
I do think that's. That's kind of the beauty of the final episode was we did watch and we did have a very big reaction to it. But then once we sat down and really unpacked it, I think by the end, all three of us were like, yeah, no, that was the only way to end it. Really. It made so much sense.
It really was. And I even was like, yeah. And guess what the theme at the end of the show was? Guess when it first appeared? With Little Mama. Mm-hmm. That's right. And I think that's my favorite trivia fact about the last episode. It was just so layered, and I got to show Nick all the episodes, and we were going through. I was like, I think we got the second to last episode, and they're like, oh, temporary blindness. I was there when you guys watched that episode. I was like, oh, so we're on the finale. Okay. And I turned off YouTube on the TV and I went to my computer to like load up the edited version. And they're like, what are you doing? And I was like, just shut up. And I like turned on the episode and they're like, oh, thank God. I thought you were about to put on a Mr. Meaty.
I'm like, just shut up and let me do my thing.
Shut up, Brendan. Because that's the other thing is I started rewatching the show. I went back and rewatched the UPN 5. My thought process while doing this rewatch is like, so in anime, there are like essential viewing episodes and then there's filler. And I'm trying to go, I watched the first episode and the first episode is actually so much better than I remembered it being. It's like
the Get Away From My Mom.
Yeah, it's concise. It introduces all the characters and it gets all the way through to the end and just kind of shows who Brendan is because he's also making a movie at the same time that correlates with, you know, Dark Side of the Law and shows him. And I think it's just, I don't know what I gave that grade for that episode, but it needs to be higher now, especially with context. So now I'm going through all the episodes, trying to see which episodes I can remove from the timeline to try and get a more concise Brendan story, so when the finale hits, it actually really fucking hits. But now the problem I've been coming into is every time I watch an episode, I'm like, well, that's essential. And just like, well, that one's essential.
Are you trying to Dragon Ball home movies?
A little bit, yeah.
Well, I don't know if I would necessarily agree with that, because even the non-essential episodes, there's probably some kind of lore drop or line or something that happens. It's like, well, even if this episode isn't important, that part is important.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I thought I was going to be able to get away from Brendan Gets Rabies. I was like, I got it. That one's got to go.
The monkey.
I think you're going to be able to slim home movies down to a nice lean 51 episodes.
He just gets rid of Honky Magoo.
Yeah, he's like, not important at all.
That's the only one I want to get rid of, to be honest. And you will inevitably find yourself buying less cat food.
R.I.P. Mitch. Yeah, I think especially since we've seen the upgrade in, just on a bare level of quality of animation, I think it's really easy for us to, be so used to season 4 and then want to say, oh yeah, season 1, whatever. But no, that season still had a lot of heart. Mm-hmm. It still set up a lot of lore and backstory and had some classic home movies lines that you can't neglect. And it's one of those things that I think another thing that makes season 1 so special is you see the starting point. You see their abilities to animate in season 1. I know they were limited by the program that they were using at the time to do the squiggle animation. And multiple people I talked to, I think Damon included, said it got to a point where they were emulating the squiggle vision, which made the process so much harder, when the whole point of squiggle vision was it was easy.
Mm-hmm.
So now you're taking additional steps to make it look bad?
Yeah. I have so much more respect for the UPN5. So much more respect.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of lines there that I actually found myself going oh, that was very fucking funny. That one was really fucking funny. It's like, now Officer Brendan's gone bad. That one killed me. And then rewatching Art of the Sucker Punch, I don't know why that one, you're gonna lose! You're gonna lose! Who is that guy? I don't know. It must be a friend of Shannon's. What are you doing now? Going home to lose. And I don't even like admitting this, rewatching that one, I felt really bad for Jason.
Yeah, you did. Yeah,
I did. Because you love him.
No, it's just they can't treat you like this. No, they can.
Oh.
I love
you, but you bring it upon yourself.
You're all And I think that too, not only established I felt bad for Jason that episode for sure, but it also established, what are Brendan's motives sometimes? Is he actually looking out for his friend, or is he looking for an excuse to lift weights in front of a mirror and film his big... So, yeah, right from the jump, I think we get a little peek behind Brendan and kind of how, what motivates him at times. And, I know I've spoke about this, especially in the early season, but it was something that was throughout the show. I really have a lot of respect for the creator, Brendan Small, to attach his name and likeness to a character who, at times, kind of sucks.
There's a point where I started grading Brendan, because at one point I think he sucked so bad that I was like, he's got to get a grade, and that grade is an F.
Yeah.
I can't remember when that was, but definitely happened at some point.
Yeah. So, home movies, such a delight. Shall we talk about the interview with Damon Wong?
Yes.
I have so much I want to talk about with this interview, because I will say this interview had, I think, a little bit of a different tone, I guess I want to say, than the other interviews. And I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. I think it was very interesting to get a perspective that wasn't, I'm not saying like the other interviews were bad, because they had like a very positive, like, reminiscence of home movies, whereas Damon was like, no, I remember being stressed. I remember being a hothead. I think it's good to get those other perspectives because, you know, hey, that's life, baby. It's yeah. not always sunshine and puppy dogs.
It grounds it in reality a little bit.
I think so.
And you also kind of need that person on board any creative project otherwise. I'm not saying you need someone to yell at you during every creative process.
I do.
But you need somebody. But you need a grounded figure that's like, come on, guys, we can all just sit here and shoot people with Nerf guns all day, but we need to do something right now mm-hmm. to get this fucking episode out.
Yeah.
Louis C.K., you've been fucking up this whole time.
I can get upon that.
Yeah. One of the things I definitely would like to talk about with Damon's interview, and this is something that I think, well, I know definitely everyone on this podcast has experienced, but I think it is just something that comes with the territory of being a creative type and putting yourself out there creatively in any way, shape, or form. And that is everybody's good friend, imposter syndrome.
I know her well.
It was funny for me because at one point, Damon almost equated it to like, well, I don't know about you, but I'm a little bit older. Therefore, you know, I have imposter syndrome. And I'm like, oh, brother, I know people in their 20s who very much have imposter syndrome.
Oh, yeah.
I got held back in kindergarten just because I was like, it wasn't like I was a really bad student in kindergarten, but I was like too young. So they held me back a grade to kind of like keep me
sure.
secure. But then every grade after that, I was like, I'm not supposed to be here. Like, I'm not good enough to be here. They're going to hold me back again. So imposter syndrome has been following me for a very long time. And not just with grades, like through everything. And I think it affects everybody because we see all of this like wonderful stuff that people make. And we go, oh, man, how'd you make that? Not knowing like everything that goes into it. And when you try to make it, what's that quote? Comparison is the thief of joy.
Mm-hmm.
And you're just comparing yourself to everybody else, to the point. And my friend called me out on this one point because we were reading something. It was a paragraph, some sort of thing we were reading for school. And I was reading it, and we were reading it out loud. And I was like, oh, who wrote this? This is really good. And they're like, that was you 6 months ago. And I was like, no, it wasn't. It's bad. It's actually bad. I just decided right now it's bad.
You just accidentally gave yourself a compliment.
Mm-hmm. I don't know what that is in our culture where we like can't be nice to ourselves. Otherwise, we feel like, what's the word? Like, not narcissistic, but like something in that vein. Like, we can't, like, we'll get too big for our britches and that'll be our downfall. This, like, there's that weird fear.
Yeah, this is always something I've kind of personally struggled with. And maybe this is not the right word you were looking for, but for me, it's walking that line and not being too egotistical, where you're trying to, anytime you do anything, you should have some self-confidence. You should have some confidence in yourself that you are doing the thing. You're getting up, you're putting in the effort, you're putting it out there. That in and of itself is such a huge task. The amount of people I talk to about stand-up comedy who absolutely could do it, but the biggest hurdle is always going up for the first time. You can get yourself so far, but you gotta have that little bit of self-confidence to push you over to actually do something. And to have self-confidence but not be so full of yourself is such a weird line to walk. With comedy, I see it all the time. I see people who do comedy that should not have nearly the self-confidence they have, but they go up there and say this shit with their whole chest. And then I see people who are some of the smartest, wittiest, most talented people step away from comedy because they don't feel like they belong there. So imposter syndrome is so dangerous because I feel like it is easily verified by one negative comment or one person not connecting with your work the way you think they should. And then suddenly it's like, oh, yeah, no, the imposter syndrome was right. I don't know what the fuck I'm doing. I should not be here. And I think it's something that once we realize, if I named my top five favorite comedians, I guarantee you at one point in their career, they've had some form of imposter syndrome, if not consistently. Comedians I look up to be like, I wish I could be like them. Like your Paul F. Tompkins types. I listen to that dude on podcasts. He has to go to therapy for his imposter syndrome sometimes. I think at the end of the day, we need to come up with the realization that we all simultaneously know what we're doing, but then every single person on this earth also does not know what the fuck we're doing.
Yeah.
It's such a weird duality to live with, but it's true. Like, if you're putting yourself out there, you have a little bit of self-awareness and you know what you're doing, but none of us know what we're doing. None of us.
Right. And just to kind of spin it in more of like a positive note, I feel like imposter syndrome tends to keep people in check so they don't go over the deep end and become like cocky and think they're the hot shit. You know, I feel like as frustrating as imposter syndrome is, I think people who worry about that stuff, it's just a telltale sign that they aren't assholes, that they're right. Just trying their best and not giving in to this, like, I mean, the cockiness, you know?
Absolutely. I felt at any point during that interview, Damon could have just stopped and been like, hey, I'm Damon fucking Wong. And I'd be like, dude, you're right. I'm so sorry. You know what I mean? But he didn't. And I think that's part of what just like makes him this like force is exactly what you said, Adele, is like that imposter syndrome is keeping him grounded and keeping him from being like, I fucking crush it on Bob's Burgers and I crushed it on Home Movie.
I mean, I think something that's very important, because like I know imposter syndrome can help you stay grounded, be humble, not be a terrible person to be around. But and maybe this is maybe not the best way to go about things, because we shouldn't be looking for validation constantly in order for us to like continue making stuff or being who we are. But I will say having support is so helpful to keep you going and to get through that imposter syndrome. Sorry for any red faces that happen in the chat here. But like Tim, the amount of work ethic that you put into just like your entire creative process is insane. Like every week you go run that open mic, even though a lot of the time you come away from it going, God damn, who the fuck was that guy? And why doesn't he have imposter syndrome?
Yeah.
And like the work you put on this podcast and like just the little details that you put into certain aspects of the editing or the way that you publish it makes the podcast that much better. Like chasing good audio, getting a better mixer, getting like better mics is just so helpful because of our community. But also like Adele has made so much amazing art. I'm staring at a picture of Mothman that she painted for me on my birthday, and she constantly tells me she hates this piece. I love that one. The way that the polka dots are on it, it's so colorful, and the red eyes, and the way that I just love that. And she's also done so much great paintings that we have in Sokka 2. She made some great paintings for Sokka 2. And she's also, and she's going to hate this, a very wonderful singer. Like, okay. See, like, but here's the thing. I think you hate hearing that because you hear that and you're like, I'm not the greatest. But who is the greatest?
The other adult.
Whitney Houston? Whitney Houston?
Yeah.
And even she, like, had some bad performances. It's just what being human is. And I think just having supportive people around you is essential to get through that imposter syndrome. There are towards the end of like the last season of Puzzle Valley, I was struggling to put those episodes out, but just because you guys were so like supportive and giving me like validation when I needed it, that was what was like, okay, yeah, I can do this. And I just personally think the only way that you can really get through that is by having people around you who are able to support you and having a good community that kind of can ground you in a different way.
Having people like genuinely believe in your talent. I mean, shit. Even when like I don't feel like I have any talent whatsoever, just hearing people say it, it gives me a spark of motivation to be like, maybe I do have something. Maybe I should do a new painting or some shit. So
I'm always excited to see them.
Yeah.
Words go a long way, and I think they're, I mean, any kind word is obviously appreciated. Yeah. So.
Well, it's funny for me because I hear Adele all the time kind of talk down about her art when I know it's not true at all. And then I will go and spend time with my parents, and my mom gushes about how talented Adele is as an artist. My mom has multiple of Adele's paintings hanging in their space, and she's just like so fucking proud of you.
Oh, this is supposed to be a home movies podcast. Adele's talented podcast.
Well, that's the next season.
Yeah,
exactly. But you know what, though? I think it does make sense, though, because Home Movies is such a show that is grounded in creativity. Mm-hmm. It is about children expressing their creativity. The show itself is a bunch of animators and illustrators expressing their creativity. The show resonates with creative people. So it's just this huge cyclical thing of creativity. That's why this podcast, when it was conceived, it was so easy for it to be like a pro art podcast, because we're artists. Yes, we are. Doodly do. Yes, we are. But it's you know, game recognized game. We all have our own passion projects, this podcast being one of them, and we can watch Home Movies and understand that Home Movies is a passion project. These animators, this is a passion for them. And just the way they express themselves and the way they add to the show, the way the you know, the people running the show were like, just go for it, man. We're not going to sit here and tell you what to do and put handcuffs on and make you delete all this work for no reason. I mean, it was just literally the show was an offspring of artists allowed to be artists.
Yeah.
And I will say about like the community, like validating words, like all of the animators, all of them gave, even the writers gave Damon such props. Like every time they had a chance, they're like, oh yeah, Damon's amazing. Damon's like so talented, to the point where even when we were watching the episode Hiatus with the jazz opening, it was supposed to be bad. That makes sense, because even during that episode, we were like, what are you talking about? That's the greatest thing they've ever made. Why are they saying it's so bad?
Up until that point, I was like, that was amazing. Why do they hate it?
Yeah.
And it turns out it was supposed to be bad, but Damon killed it so good that they're like, keep it. Keep it in.
And it always cracks me up. It's like the thing about like perspective. I'm sure everyone who worked on Home Movies spoke so highly of Damon. And then he goes and works on Bob's Burgers, and he's like, oh my God, you worked on Roger Rabbit. Holy shit, this guy's a fucking rock star. Like, it's such a perspective thing. I don't know. It just cracks me up.
Yeah. Well, you always keep moving the goalposts. And I think that's part of it, is in order to really battle imposter syndrome, you have to kind of accept the compliments that come your way. Because I know the like, be humble idea is something that makes me like swat away compliments, so I don't like, oh yeah, I'm not the best thing in the world, because if I feel that way, then I'm a terrible person. Sometimes you just have to accept the compliments, and that's the best way you can grow. Yeah. That's
so
the best
hard
way
to accept a compliment, though.
It's terrible. It's so hard. It really is.
Here's a little life hack I picked up doing comedy, because dude, I was that guy the first couple years where people be like, dude, you're funny. I'm like, you're dumb.
You're stupid.
Yeah. Well, you know nothing. No, it was this thing I learned that whenever I would get complimented in comedy, I would always be very grateful and appreciative on the outside. I would say, thank you very much. Thanks for coming to the show or the mic or whatever. And then internally, I would disagree with every fiber of my being. So that was kind of my workaround for that. It's always, dude, I consume a lot of art. I can, I go to live stuff. If somebody is taking the time out of their day after a show to approach you to give you a compliment or tell you you're funny or something like that, like, dude, I've felt that way numerous times and never did anything about it.
Yeah.
So these people, like, taking the time to actually, you need to show some gratitude for that. You need to say, hey, thank you very much. Thanks for coming to the show. Thanks for supporting local art. Yeah. And then in your head, you're like, you're wrong, but.
I think that is a very good point, that people just don't give out compliments just to give out compliments. You know what I mean? So.
Do you remember when I had a conversation with former guest Amy Blaze, and we talked about the, if you see someone out in public and you like their style or you dig their shirt or whatever, like, just pay them a compliment. It might make their entire day. And I'm like, you know what? Yeah, I'm going to fucking do that. And that day, we're grocery shopping, and a dude, like, turned a corner wearing a Fallout shirt. And if you know anything about me, my two personalities are the 1999 animated series Home Movies and Fallout. And I was like, oh, hey, man, I like your shirt. And that dude gave me the nastiest look. I don't think he said a fucking word to me.
Nope, just kept walking.
No, and what a dick. Not only walking, I think he backed out of the aisle and went a different direction.
I don't remember that, but Jesus.
That's what happens when you are so averse to compliments that you don't know how to react. And you're like, fuck you.
Yeah. You're a fucking weirdo. What the hell?
He was probably used to arguing with people on the internet and just, like, froze and was like, what the fuck? Fuck.
Kindness?
You like this? You like nuclear war? What's wrong with you?
It's like he's arguing, but opposite. I don't know how to react to this.
It, like, I don't want to stay on it for too long, but, like, we got a couple more emails from some people that was very nice, and one of them was about how they actually started their own, like, quote-unquote creative corner where they have a space where they bring people up and they talk about stuff that they've been, like, consuming, producing, all that stuff to, like, kind of highlight. And they said that they brought up the podcast up there. And it filled me with so much, like, joy just to hear that, just to see that there's some sort of influence that we're giving out that's in a positive way.
Absolutely. Now, I don't know if this, I don't think this was something that, like, the Creative Corner inspired. But I think this was something that they were kind of on their own doing as, like, an anti-social media thing, right? Where social media is so fucking gross right now and Amen. So hateful that they would just kind of get together and instead of arguing and highlighting the bad, they talk about the good. And it's a very, like, you know, positive space. They said it's very, like, somebody will say, oh, I've been watching this, and it's very, like, say more, go on, tell us. And I'm not going to lie, when we got that email, I'm like, I want to do something like that, even if it's just, like, over Discord, just, like, a hangout with 5-6 people where you're just highlighting some positive stuff you're consuming at the moment, I think would be so beneficial for people's mental health.
Oh, incredibly so. Incredibly so, because I know we all just say, like, ah, touch grass, but, like, community. I think that'll be the last time I bang on my drum about it. But, like, community is so important, and just hearing that is wonderful. And that just, like, hearing the compliments is nice and it's validating. And I wish we could just, like, keep pushing that forward as just people. As just, like, if there's going to take anything away, just, like, please, like, be nice to each other.
And
give each other the space to not have to fight themselves on the daily with, like, if they're doing okay or not.
Absolutely.
It's free to be nice. Capitalism really hasn't come for niceness.
Not yet. Yeah. Niceness does not have a premium subscription yet. Yeah. Have to pay for Nice Plus.
Oh, God.
But I think you touched on something I wanted to bring up in this last kind of recap of the series of home movies and the podcast in general, which is community. And like you said, we have been getting a lot of emails. Deep down, man, I hope I get emails about this podcast like years from now. That would make me so happy.
Yeah.
If I was sending out stickers in like 2027, I don't know. That would just make me feel really good.
I agree.
The feedback that we've gotten through like emails and reviews and the kind of general sense of the community that we have resonated with in home movies is kind of exactly the community I wanted to resonate with. There have been people who have not felt the podcast for whatever reason. I think we talked about it briefly in a previous episode.
Yeah.
And I think that's okay. I think that's completely okay. That's not the kind of people I want the podcast to resonate with. So I'm very happy that we are finding a little community within a community of people who I feel like, I mean, genuinely, I read some of these emails and I get to interact with some of these fans, and so many of them are like, yeah, these are the kind of people I would probably hang out with. Like, these are, I know at one point I screenshotted an email of you, and I'm like, we're resonating with the right kind of people. These Absolutely. Are our people.
Yeah.
And
doodly do.
Yeah. For me, I guess a personal struggle I've been really dealing with the last few years, and especially so I'd say the last like 8 or 9 months or so, is like Marcin said, I do help run an open mic. I'm very active in my comedy community, but recently I'm active in this community as in like I run an open mic, but it's one of those things where sometimes I don't feel like I'm part of this community. I feel like the kind of comedians I'm seeing and the kind of content I'm seeing is not stuff that personally I align with. And from a weird morality standpoint, I have to kind of have these internal struggles with myself because I love stand-up comedy. I love it so much, obviously. I love it to the point where I'm trying to provide a space for other people to work on this craft. But in doing so, sometimes I feel like I'm kind of allowing people to come into this space and say things that I don't agree with, that I would never say, that I think come from places of just gross hatred. And hey, that's comedy, baby. Like, the whole point of an open mic is for people to go and try stuff to see if it works or not. So I walk this weird line of like, I'm not the comedy police, dude. Like, comedy is so fucking subjective that I will never be anyone to tell anybody what is or isn't funny, what they should or shouldn't joke about. But simultaneously, I've heard some very, very gross stuff at my open mic, a place I'm trying to provide space for comedians to work their craft, but also provide an audience to come and just forget about the world being on fire and laugh and not feel marginalized or not feel punched down or not feel bullied. And it's such a fucking struggle. I don't think anyone who does comedy would ever understand the struggle until you're actually like running an open mic and doing this and hearing this and seeing this. So it creates this weird headspace for me because I feel like I'm doing something that's very morally gray because I'm allowing this to happen in my space. And I don't like it. I don't like the way it makes me feel. I don't like that I'm part of a community that supports, I don't know, man. It's just, it fucking sucks sometimes. And for the last year and a half, I've had this podcast to kind of keep close to my chest and say, well, whatever goes on out there, whatever people say into that mic doesn't represent me, but this podcast represents me.
Hell
it represents us. It represents what we stand for and what we don't stand for. And dude, it's a fucking cartoon about three 8-year-olds making fucking movies. But it means so much to so many people.
I'm glad you said that, because at one point in the interview, Damon was talking about someone telling him, like, hey, that home movies got me through my divorce. And Damon didn't know how. But right. It's like, I wrote down this in my notes. It's not just about, like, a kid who's making films, like these couple 8-year-olds, but it's like, it's about found family and outcasts of the world coming together. Like, I rewatching the show, every single one of them is kind of an outcast. Like, everyone, McGurk, Paula, Brendan, Jason, Melissa, Eric, even, because he just got left out in the dirt because of his wife left him and cheated on him. And all of them are just coming together and they're finding themselves. So, like, that represents a lot. And it's about creativity. It's why art is so important in times of heartbreak, especially. There's this one quote from Ethan Hawke where someone, like, people don't care about art, or they don't like, they're like, art's not for me or whatever, until, like, their dad dies or they break up with someone. And then all of a sudden they're, like, diving into thousands of years of heartbreak. Artists are just expressing themselves into heartbreak, into art. And it's important for us to relate to that, to resonate with that. And I don't want this to sound like I'm patronizing you or in any way, or trying to make it, like, bigger than it is. But, like, you give your heart and soul to a thing that hurts you sometimes. That is what art is. And especially for Tim, who goes to this open mic and who, like, cares about the comedy, and then has all of these shitbags that wander in off the internet going, I know what comedy is, and then just says something that's just not funny and just extremely hurtful. And then you kind of have to sit there and go, like, well, what the fuck am I doing here? But you find it in real art. You find it in real people and real humanity of just, like, you can find it in anything. I mean, there are so many, like, comfort movies, so many comfort, like, shows of mine. Like, I fucking love Small Soldiers. I fucking love Small Soldiers. And yeah, it was a movie designed in the 90s to sell toys to children, but there's a line from that movie that resonates with me to this day, and it's when Archer says, just because you can't see something doesn't mean it's not really there. Because they had to explain to Archer earlier what wind is. He's like, why are the trees moving? They're like, well, it's wind. And he's like, what's wind? I can't feel wind. He's like, well, just because you can't see something doesn't mean it's not there. And I think about that 20 years later. That's such a hardcore line. And I got it from fucking Small Soldiers. Art art matters. Art's important. And you can find it anywhere. And in those times of, like, dude, as I point to everything, heartbreak, it finding it in anything, you can and you will. And it's so important. It's so important to find it.
Yeah. And I think, you know, you really hit the nail on the head where sometimes people don't get art because they haven't experienced something that makes it like, oh, shit. That's what the artist was trying to say. That's what the artist was going through at the time. When Damon talked about his brother, and he specifically brought up that episode of SpongeBob that he had seen before and was like, yeah, whatever. But now in this new context means so much more to him. It's
such a classic episode of SpongeBob too. I'm not like, I quote that episode constantly. The man makes you a sweater of tears and you kill him. Just you, me, and the brick wall we built between us.
Classic.
But like that, like you said, sorry to cut you off there. It's you find it in everything. You really do.
Yeah.
And there are some works of art where it's like, it will resonate with you in one time of your life, and then you'll return to it maybe like 5-10 years later, and it will resonate with you in a completely different way.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like, I mean, that is like the beauty of art. It's just like, it speaks to the soul in so many levels that I mean, genuinely is healing. I had a professor in college that swore up and down that art wasn't therapy. Art wasn't therapy. Art, hell yeah, is fucking therapy for a lot of people. Just because you're not, you know, talking to a professional doesn't mean it's not therapeutic.
There is not a statement I cannot disagree with that statement more. Like, holy shit, dude. Art is therapy for people who create art. Art is therapy for people who consume art.
Yep.
And I think that's really like the thing I want to drive home is, you know, if you find a lot of therapy in consuming art, dear God, every interview I've done, they talk about like the need to create. They talk about making something, creating a student film and using that as your reel. Every single person I talk to, there's something inside of them that says you have to create. Mm-hmm. And even if you don't think you can create anything on that level, then you're the consumer. You have to consume it. You have to consume it and consume art in a way where, like, dude, you tell the artist what it means to you, if you can. You express to them, like, dude, this helped me get through. Because you might get some of that shit where, like, Damon, like, home movies helped you through a divorce? Like, how? And it's like, yeah, I don't know, man. If you go through some shit and you latch onto things, I kind of understand how. I really do.
Yeah.
Oh, I mean, I talk about Taskmaster all the time, but I found Taskmaster during the pandemic, and they had a series 10 that came out during the pandemic where they were showing. And there's just a part where Greg, like, is going into a commercial break, and he, like, looks down at the camera and he's like, go on, we're in the end times, go do something. And I was like, you're right. Like, I just, if you feel it, you're like, oh, thank God. Like, someone goddamn said it. It just, I think about this constantly, and it makes me mad that people are like, if I can get into this from the Damon interview, and I think this is very important, because we've talked to so many of the other animators who resonate with their time at home movies and who have made some amazing memories and love home movies for everything. And they are like artists who make things constantly and who are continuously making things. And I'm not saying they're not successful in their own right, but like Damon being on Bob's Burgers, a part of this like industry staple of animation that is like continuously going and going and going and just churning out episodes over and over and over. Seeing those two different perspectives on like an Alan Foreman, Phil Andrews, Chris Georginas, David San Angelo, Steve Rogan, who are like making these pieces of art and like VR headsets, and who love it and see the perspective of art through like an artistic creation of really wonderful humanity, versus how Damon kind of views it now from the industry perspective, like how he said, if I was going to teach them, my students to do something, is to put all of your effort into something, go 2 weeks making something, and then by the end of it, just delete it, because that's like how it is to actually be in the industry. And I think those are two different coins of how content is made to sell and is just out there for them to consume and just digest and go away, versus creating something for yourself to make it for yourself and have that help you, the artist. And I think those two perspectives are very important to see. Like, this interview was so interesting because Damon is just part of this industry where you're just churning shit out.
The grind set.
You don't have time to actually sit there and try to like resonate with it and see what it actually means that you want to put this color on this character at this time for some reason. You can't really think about it. You don't have time. And it's just two sides of the different coin. And that's why I think this interview was so interesting. Just seeing what the end of the show actually represented, which is like product versus art and the core differences between the two.
Right.
It was so interesting seeing that perspective.
Absolutely. And I think the way Damon put it too, which is, you know, art is subjective. And then you start getting paid for it. Now it is objective. Now, suddenly, other opinions on your art matters. It's very weird. It makes me very grateful that we are kind of in positions that we can kind of just do our own thing. We're not beholden to anyone or any corporation or whatever. By and large, Marcin, you can make whatever kind of movie you want. Adele, you can make any kind of art you want. I can do whatever I want with my comedy. We're not beholden to anyone but ourselves. And that artistic freedom is something that I think a lot of people don't understand how great it is until it's taken away.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's maybe where Damon is at right now with going from working on home movies to Bob's Burgers. Now you've got 15 people you have to go through to make sure you can make this guy's shirt blue instead of green.
Yeah. It's the Phil Tippett quote that Phil Andrews brought up where it's like all of a sudden you're not an artist, you're a mover. And it's like, oh, you want this over here or you want it over here? And you're not making the decision. You're just waiting for someone else to come in and tell you where to put it. And that it, because he even says, and I feel so bad that he thinks this way. He's like, I used to have a better filmmaker brain when he was on home movies. I don't think it's necessarily a problem with him, but it's just the industry, because when you're just churning it out, you have no time to like sit there and experiment and to go, oh, what if I did this? Oh, what if I did this? What if I do this? There's so many times where Damon's like, I used to be so much more creative when I was in home movies or this or that. I don't think that's true necessarily. I know you have no time to like work on your own stuff when you're part of, when your job is now doing this thing. I think it is just about like this, your job is a mover. Like that is what you are doing here. It's not that you're an artist right now. You are a mover. And that's why it's important to have your own stuff. But when you have no time, it's hard. It's really hard.
Yeah. And I think that's why it made a lot of sense with like Alan Foreman, for example, who illustrator, animator, all day, draw, animate. And then you want to go home and draw some more? No. He'd go home, he picks up a guitar. And it's like, yeah, because you have to be creative. But you're like, I can't just not bring my work home with me. It's a very interesting mindset. And, you know, to be a creative type and then to have somebody then put a monetary value on it, and now you have all these restrictions. Yeah, you probably do want to go home and like create something of your own on your own terms. Like it makes so much sense.
I don't want to keep jumping in. Adele, if you wanted to say something, okay. I hate that I keep jumping in because I wrote down a lot of notes just from, because the interview was so interesting, especially everything we've heard about Damon Wong leading up to this, like the fact that he was the only one who is anti-gnome in the entire show. And it made me think that maybe Damon was the one who wanted to kill the gnome.
I think he did say he was the one that put it in formaldehyde. Like in the jar on the.
Yeah. He was the one that's like, no. And then, but in the finale, like, do you think he was the one that storyboarded or made the decision for the cardboard to crush the gnome?
I mean, I do feel like that was kind of everybody's being like, well, show's over. Gotta kill the gnome.
Did you guys watch my edit of the episode?
I watched it and I saw what you did there.
I didn't watch it yet. Did he send it to us?
Yeah, he sent it to me in WeTransfer.
Oh.
And yeah. I watched it. So the song, the Lil Mama's theme, persists the entire way. The credits go over the flickering camera screen.
Mm-hmm.
I believe Adele had made a request about adding something in a quick frame or two.
Yeah.
Which was added.
Nice.
And I might have seen a little promotion for a certain podcast.
Puzzle Valley.
Oh, no, I know. Nah.
He could have put that one in the sky. No, he put the rewatching home movies logo.
Hell yeah.
In a quick little.
I got to watch the edit. I think we should post that edit to YouTube. Because it's not like it's going to get a copyright strike. So many people have posted the Home Movies episodes on YouTube. So
yeah, I just didn't want to do it out of respect because I don't know how much that like would how that would make the animators feel, you know. But if they want to see it, I know they were so upset that it went dun, 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 like after that end. So I went back and did that. If we want to post it, we can definitely post it.
All right. I'll go ahead and post it. We do have the Rewatching Home Movies YouTube page that we'll probably be posting on fairly regularly in the future, and we'll put it up on there.
Okay.
There's just a couple notes I have here. I'm going to run through some of them here just because I know we're coming up. But Damon was talking about how he was inspired by Geiger. Mm-hmm. He really wanted to do something with Geiger. Just there's a story about Geiger, and do you know who you both know who Geiger is, right?
Yeah, is it? Mm-hmm. I've heard it pronounced H.R. Giger. I don't know if that's Giger or Geiger. His art inspired all of the like aliens, like the alien movies like the big long.
Yeah,
a lot of his art inspired stuff like that.
Well, there's a story that I've heard could be true, could be not true. I don't know. I saw it from an interview that was like quoting Geiger, one of those where all of his art, he took LSD while having sex with two trans women in Europe somewhere. And all of his art, including the alien stuff, has been a reflection and an expression of reliving that moment when he was having that moment. And while he was on LSD. I just cut that if you want, but I just wanted to add that part because I wrote it down here.
How do you spell his name?
I think it's
G-E-I-G-E-R?
Something like that. H-R. Letter H, letter R for the first and middle initial. So H-R Geiger. He's got some wild shit.
Yeah. Our mutual friend Ed is a huge Geiger fan, so...
Yeah,
these are dope as hell.
I'm not gonna lie. When I was like probably in my early 20s, I wanted a tattoo of like kind of some H.R. Geiger inspired. I wanted it to be like maybe on my back arm and shoulder, kind of look like the skin's ripped open, and then it looks like kind of some H.R. Geiger type shit underneath.
That would have been pretty hot.
You would have got Adele twice.
We'd be getting double married.
But then I know it was super... So again, about art, because I know Damon brought up the passing of his brother. And when he was talking about his brother, he kept talking about how he was working on Home Movies and he was just trying to make his brother laugh. He was just trying... Like, that was his audience, was his brother. And I found that incredibly sweet. And that's what art is so important. You are showing your love through art. And I know it's just to make your brother laugh, but that is a way of showing love. And I think that resonates with me specifically because I have always made art specifically for people in my life that I wanted to see their reaction. I wanted to make them smile. I wanted to like make them laugh. And That's just one of the things I found so incredibly important in Damon's work. Like, I think that was what made Home Movies so special, is that everybody, like David Santangelo putting in his brother, was it his brother or his friend who threw up at the concert?
Yeah, it was his brother.
Yeah.
And all of these, like, Damon's like, we weren't supposed to show the audio from the clips, but I brought him home to show my brother anyway.
Of course, we're listening to the audio,
and it's just so sweet. And I just wanted to add that part of like, there's so many ways to show love. There's so many ways, and for that to be like Damon's like first thought every time he thinks about Home Movies is so special.
It really is.
It was just for his brother.
Yeah. There's something absolutely beautiful about, you know, him and his brother talking film and then Damon getting an idea, adding it into an episode of Home Movies, and then getting to show his brother like, hey, check this out. Like, that's Yeah, that's so awesome.
It really is. I can understand how. I just want to be as respectful as I can to Damon when I say this. So please, I hope you don't take it out of I hope you understand it's extremely respectful when I say this, because I also had family members that are no longer in my life that I had a lot of love for. And when I would make my art, it was always for them. And when all of a sudden they weren't there, I felt very directionless with my art. And I know how heartbreaking that can be. It takes a while, but I think you still can find your spark again, because I found so many wonderful people that I make art for now. Like, two of them are in this call. And I just think it's so... I love art. I love it. And I love what it actually means, the self-expression in it. Like, Nick comes home after working I don't know how many hours and comes home and crochets me shit. Like, every day. I'm wearing a crochet hat that's... Like, they make me, like, crochet shit all of the time. And then when they're done, they're like, what else you want? I was like, okay. It's the same for everyone who's an artist. I'm sure they have so many people that they want to, like, either show, or they're making it for this other person. And I just can't get enough of that. I love it. I love it so much.
Yeah, sharing art is, like, a whole nother level of love language. It really is. I have things that Adele has given to me as gifts that are art. I can see one of them from where I sit here. There's another one hanging right above my monitor in the game room.
Both Fallout references.
Both Fallout references. Yeah. And one of them has the lyrics to the song that we will be dancing to for our first dance at our wedding. So.
You shook me on.
Oh, my parents would be like, what the hell?
Like, your parents aren't already going to be like, what the hell?
They absolutely are. Especially in today's age, when this world is trying to bury the artist, I think it is most important to make art today.
Yeah.
No, absolutely.
Because it's a soul connection. It's the easiest way for humans to communicate, like, on a resonating level, is through art.
It's how we stretch back to the caveman.
Yeah,
like,
absolutely.
It's such a, like, connective tissue to every aspect of our humanity. Just real quick, the last two notes. The left turn in the interview when Damon started talking about 9/11 fucking killed me.
Because
he was talking about, like, oh yeah, 9/11 happened while I was on Home Movies. He's talking about the restaurant. I just have to bring this up, but it killed me. It fucking killed me, because he was like, yeah, we were at a restaurant, and he's like, oh God, I hope it's not the Chinese, because we're very, very Asian. That killed me so bad. I was laughing so much, my coworkers from down the hall, like, came in to check in on me, because they just heard me maniacally laughing. That was so fucking out of left field for me. That just fucking killed me. And then my last note of the interview isn't even really about Damon. We need to talk to Jack Ferriolo.
Oh my God, dude, I would love to. I think I'm going to, I'll reach. This is always how the process starts for me, is I send a friend request on Facebook and I hope for the best. And then if that doesn't work, I start trying to find emails and websites. So yeah, I would love that personally. And I think that also kind of transitions perfectly into the final thing I wanted to kind of talk about this episode.
The surprise.
Which is a surprise. A surprise I have mentioned before. I had come in contact a while ago with the art director of Home Movies, a woman by the name of Aya Fukuda. And Aya, we've been going back and forth in email. Aya is very kind. I asked her if she wanted to do a audio interview, and she said, no, thank you. She's very nervous. And I was like, same. Big fucking same. I think even Alan Foreman had brought it up, like, yeah, but a lot of us are behind the camera people, not in front of the camera people, which I totally understand. But Aya was nice enough to answer a couple questions for me via email.
Let's go. Let's go.
So if you don't mind, I have a couple cues that I sent over to Aya, and she responded with some answers.
Hell yeah.
So the first question, I don't know if you noticed this, this is kind of the first question I ask everybody I've talked to, which is, how did you fall in love with art, and how did that inevitably lead to you working on home movies? Aya said, growing up, my relatives in Japan sent me VHSs of cartoons and GIFs that had the cutest illustrations on them. My first dream was to work for Sanrio, which does Hello Kitty, Little Twin Stars, or some company that made these adorable stationery papers, planners, and pencil cases, etc. There's been a huge boom of all things Japanese recently, and that's what I grew up with and what influenced me to pursue art. I knew I wanted to draw for a living and ended up going to RISD for illustration. When I graduated, I moved up to Waterton, where I was doing some freelance illustration and making stained glass mirrors and frames. My roommate Sam worked at Tom Snyder Productions on a project called Science Court. In each episode, someone is on trial, and the case is solved by teaching scientific principles like gravity, the water cycle, electricity. Side note, this is where a lot of the talent from home movies came from. Paula Poundstone was a judge, Bill Broadus was a lawyer, and H. John Benjamin was a Professor Parsons.
Wow, that's fun. That's fun.
They needed a part-time artist, and that's how I joined Tom Snyder Productions. By the time season two came around, I was having a beer with Andre Lyman, director of animation, and I said, wow, managing sounds fun. And that's where my art direction role began. In a bar. After Science Court, I worked on Hey Moni and some other animated shorts. I think we did a pilot where the Boston Pops conductor, Keith Lockhart, taught me the history of music. There were other projects in there, but it was so long ago I don't remember. I joined Home Movies crew on episode 6 and managed the team from there. So she was basically the art director for the entire Adult Swim run. So if she came on N6, that was after the UPN 5.
Yeah.
So another question I asked her were, what are slash were some of your animated influences? She said, the first animations we watched as kids were Doraemon, Mobile Suit Gundam, and Astro Boy.
Gundam.
Along with Tom and Jerry, Looney Tunes, The Muppet Show, Saturday morning cartoons. But over the years, I was a big fan of concept art. Miyazaki, Pixar, Star Wars, Mary Blair, to name a few, to see their initial visions or how a character looked developed from start to finish was very inspiring. So I asked, what is a favorite moment working on the show? And she said, I've got to say, working with all the artists and collaborating with Lauren and Brendan, I do cherish the time I had at Soup because deadlines were so tight and stressful. We spent so much time together. It became like a second family. Sometimes dysfunctional, sometimes frustrating, but a mostly fun family.
Aww.
That's what a family is.
Yep. So as you know, we all got to work on design, storyboards, and animating. A majority of artists we hired were illustrators, and like me, learned how to storyboard and animate on the fly. If it wasn't for Tom Snyder Productions / Soup to Nuts, I don't think we would have that opportunity. There was no real cohesion to the show. Everybody's scenes look different from each other, but I think that's what made it special. Everyone brought their own viewpoint, humor, and personality, and were influenced by each other to elevate their own scenes. There's a sense of pride to be able to say, hey, I drew this whole scene. And because the show was so open to creativity, a lot of the animators pushed the boundaries, experimented, and just wanted to make each other laugh. Towards the beginning of Home Movies, a coworker got a job in LA to draw props for a big TV show. I think it might have been King of the Hill. And I remember thinking, wait, you just draw props? That sounds so boring.
Yeah, just make it invisible like us.
Exactly. It takes me 3 minutes to draw a prop. I don't know what your issue is. I said, some artists tend to not consume the product they helped create, and understandably so. That being said, did you watch Home Movies after the fact? And she said, you know, I haven't seen Home Movies in over 20 years, but I'm guessing I will still recognize every artist's scene. The first two seasons were really hectic and there wasn't a lot of time to pause and enjoy it. My job was mostly teaching, reviewing, fixing, and finishing up scenes to meet deadlines. Part of that was checking over the scenes frame by frame and listening to the audio over and over and over again. Pretty grueling, so I definitely avoided it for a few years. It wasn't until seasons 3 and 4 that I had the time to breathe and enjoy storyboard and animate, and I learned a ton from everyone else's talent, especially Damon, Nicolay, and David's boards. So having the time to work on them, collaborate, and do more of the creative stuff made those seasons more enjoyable. Ever since you contacted me, I've been meaning to rewatch all the episodes, but there's so many people that I've met over the years who are also Home Movies fans. I want to make some temporary tattoos of McGurk's cow and the Chiquita banana for a friend, but I have to dig up some CD drive to access those ancient files.
Oh my God.
That would be so dope.
So at some point, yes, I'm going to dive back and binge the entire series.
I forgot. So I have a cow. So the cheese I like. I am an idiot.
Don't live like me, Brandon.
I just want to say something really
quick. Go ahead. Yeah.
Because she mentioned like each scene was kind of like created by a different artist. So it was like their baby, right? And it reminded me, not to make this like a creative corner because it's not, but it reminded me of this YouTube video called Shrek Retold, where they take every scene is by a different artist. So there's like one scene will be all in claymation, one will be in like live action. And it's on YouTube for free, but it just reminded me of that, where it's like all these artists coming together to just like recreate something that's already amazing.
Yeah.
That just reminded me.
I love those. I love that. There was a project. I don't know if it got off the ground, but they were going to do, it was in the Adventure Zone, where they were going to do the first episode of the Adventure Zone, but every like 4 minutes was going to be a different artist. Mm. And I think they did a little bit, but I don't think they finished that project. But like, I love that. I love it so much.
Yeah.
It's so cool.
I feel like I've seen projects like that where, yeah, every minute or so is animated by a different person. And it's just like, you get to see all the different styles and personalities. And
yeah.
Yeah, that's really cool. But also, I personally never, I mean, like sometimes you'd be like, I think this might be a Damon scene, but I was never like, each of these scenes seems different and unique. And,
right.
You know.
I'm sure it was more sensitive to them since they were like around each other all the time.
Right. And I'm sure since I, being the art director, had to pretty much be in every single second of every frame of every animation, was probably like, yeah, I could look at three different scenes and tell you who the main artist was. Whereas I'm like, wait, there were different artists for those scenes? So I also asked Aya who her favorite character / episode is. And she said, my favorite character would have to be McGurk.
Nice.
And a lot of it is because of what the artist did with the audio, but also H. Jen Benjamin is a great voice actor. And the way McGurk's personality was elevated by the artist was really superb. Just looking at McGurk when he had huge pecs.
Why? Why is this?
Or when he's in his PJs with the teddy bear, watching QVC in a sweaty tank top. It is hilarious. They added dimension to his personality, and I think that's what makes him such an awesome character. And I agree with that, especially with like the untold, like McGurk finding himself, you know, having the Zen guarding and meditating and stuff like that. Like, yeah. McGurk had a whole like animated journey that was just never spoken of.
Yeah. And so did Jason. So there was some times where Jason would just be like meditating and there's no explanation.
My sarcastic rhythm.
So two more questions I had for Aya. Your favorite thing that you've ever snuck into a background? And she said, I don't remember offhand if I snuck anything into a background, but if any of the animators wanted to sneak stuff in for fun, I was all for it. A bunch of us created characters of ourselves as secondary characters that we would occasionally put nicknames in the credits. My favorite credits are from the history episode. I think I threw in Sailor Uranus as Damon's credit. If it made them happy, then I was happy.
Aww.
And the final question was, why gnomes? And she even put, this is our biggest question. She said, "Boy, I'm so glad that Damon talked about how the gnome started because I did not remember." So yeah, adding the gnome to every episode became like an inside joke, a fun addition to the episodes. We would get together and look at the storyboards. I think that's when we would look for the best place for a gnome to go. I was shocked that the gnome in Formaldehyde got through standards, but that may have been the best gnome sighting of the series. I did ask Aya if she had anything to plug or promote. She said, "I wish." She's working on a fun project right now, creating storyboards, but she's not allowed to promote it yet. Yeah.
She should reach out when she can, and then we'll promote it.
Well, dude, I immediately responded, "Holy cow." I'm like, "I am honored you took the time to answer these questions. Thank you so much." She almost immediately replied and said, "Oh my God, Tim, I have to say thank you. You and your co-hosts for keeping Home Movies alive and sharing it with other people. If I ever find the cow and Chiquita Banana, I'll be sending you guys some tats."
Aww, yes. Aww, please, thank you.
Some other random tidbits for your amusement. One of my favorite things to animate was the Camp McGurk hallucinating scene.
Let's go.
Yeah.
Damon did the storyboard, and Davio, baby Damon as well, did those hilariously disturbing cutaways. Animating the shadows from the trees drove me batty because my computer kept crashing, but I learned a lot through that, and it made me a better artist.
Oh, the crashing computer. Oh, I still deal with that.
Genuinely, probably one of my favorite scenes in the entire show.
Absolutely.
Is that.
Oh,
yeah. I feel like I have never related to McGurk so much in my life.
Cloud Chaser!
During that scene.
when he's having a breakdown.
Yeah, son. It's my favorite McGurk. Bearded and breaking down.
I love when the camera is like swirling around him in that big anime fight scene style.
Yeah.
That same absolutely. Episode.
Well, I will say Aya did include at the end of the last email she sent that all of her work and art can be found at ayafukudaart.com, and that's AYAFUKUDAART. So Aya sent me a couple things that she had lying around. One of them is like two JPEGs that I have. I only have season 4 on a hard drive that I could access. But this is how you broke up episodes and assigned people scenes. So for the Septipus episode, I assigned Damon all the movie scenes to keep those cohesive. And the same with Davio for the gym scenes. So it's basically like a spreadsheet of everybody's scenes when they had to be in. And yeah, it's really cool. Like scene 1, Damon's a storyboard animator, Phil is the animator, and it's the Septipus, Melissa, Jason, Brendan, and Fenton. So yeah, it's like a little shoot schedule of like when they had to turn stuff in.
And then
another thing she sent is I am closing a PDF of the Home Movies Bible that has some bios of the cast. I believe it was done in 2004 after Home Movies ended. So, but yeah, it is talent bios. It's got like pretty much little breakdowns for everybody. Brendan Small, 26, planned a career as a composer, but began doing stand-up comedy as a diversion while attending Boston's Berklee College of Music. You got H. John Benjamin, who's appeared in every Tom Snyder production. Melissa, who was a production assistant on Politically Incorrect before becoming Jonathan Katz's assistant in 1996. Janine DiTullio, who was nominated for 6 Emmys as a staff writer for Late Night with Conan O'Brien. Lauren Bouchard, who is an editor, story writer, producer, and director on Dr. Katz. Bill Broadus, the writer, who was portrayed as Doug Savage in The Science Court. Attorney Bill Broadus brought his life to the ABC Saturday morning animated show Squiggle Vision in such a favorite character, the show co-created and written by Bill and Tom Snyder. So, yeah, just some cool little things that she sent over to share with us.
So. That's so dope. Thanks. Yeah. Thank you.
Genuinely, thank you so much.
Yeah. And like, dude, just thank you for answering my questions. Holy cow. Yeah. Like, that was amazing.
Yeah. There are some people that we've been trying to find to like message and email. There's a few of them that I just cannot find. They're just like not like I don't want to like put this out there, and I've been looking for Kim O'Neil for a while because she was the one who came up with the character designs with the pajamas that went over everything. Cannot find her. Cannot find her. And I even looked at like other interviews with other home movies participants, creators, and they couldn't find Kim O'Neil. So like it's a bit hard to find a lot of everybody, but we appreciate you so much for like sending in those questions.
Yeah. Well, everybody who took the time to talk to me, either if it was on a recorded interview or I did not have to respond to those questions.
No.
You know, she could have been like, hey, thanks, but no thanks. Like super, super kind. So like, I really appreciate that. Everyone, like I said, who has talked to us, everyone who has allowed me to message them with random questions and comments and has been so cool. Like, I truly, you know, wrapping up this chapter of the podcast, if you would have told me we got to talk to, I mean, half of the people we did, I would have been, I probably wouldn't have believed you. But everybody we talked to was just like so cool and so nice. And yeah, some of them really, really knew how kind of special Home Movies was. And Damon is still kind of confused why I wanted to talk to him.
Yeah.
It's okay.
Just a little bit about the Damon thing. I remember when we found that one character in one of the restaurant scenes, I think it was in Therapy, who is like drawing something at the table. And we're like, that's Damon. And he's got a big old smile and he's like drawing. And we're like, ah, that's Damon. And then it's like, oh, that's not Damon. It's that grumpy guy at the liquor store. I don't know. This show is just filled with so many good, like, so many fun moments that now that we have the context for it, it makes it so much more fun and special.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. I didn't think I could love Home Movies more, guys, but doing this podcast, I was genuinely worried at the end of this podcast, I was going to be like, all right, I think I'm going to shelf Home Movies for a while, but I could watch another episode. I could watch episodes right now.
I
still love this show.
Watch it again.
I haven't rewatched any of like the earlier seasons whatsoever, so I kind of want to do that just to see the starch difference.
Yeah,
it's a lot.
Yeah,
but I think in a good way. I think I just rewatched Yoko, and that was really fun.
Yeah,
going seeing Brendan just let us a transit. Let us a transit.
Mm. Yeah. Oh, gang. Well, this is. I mean, like, when I say this, I mean, the podcast in general has genuinely been so much fun.
Yeah.
It's been such a blast getting together with you guys and just chatting Home Movies. It was an honor to talk to so many people that worked on the show. And it felt so good to have people reach out to say how much they enjoyed the podcast and to see that we are resonating with some cool people.
Yeah. I know we haven't really completely figured out what we wanted to do for season two, but this is going to be a break that we're going on because two of the co-hosts here are getting married.
Yes. Marcin and I decided.
Yeah.
Huge joke.
I'll see myself out.
No. Yeah, no, I did want to bring that up. So we did have we were going to do a tier list of all the episodes of Home Movies. That is something that we wanted to do as kind of the cap to wrap everything up. That we probably won't get to that towards the end of the month because, like Marcin said, Adele and I are getting married.
Yeah.
So this episode is going to drop. The week that it drops, if you're listening to it, yeah, we're days away. And by the time you get around to it, we'll probably already be married. So I'm so fucking excited, dude. You guys have no idea.
Mm.
This is going to be, it's going to be the best party ever.
Mm.
And it's going to be a party to celebrate the love between Adele and I.
It's been 2 years in the making.
Yeah. So obviously we're going to take a little breaky for that. I tried to schedule a record before the ceremony, but I was shot down. that was a
I was about to say.
No, so yeah, we'll be off for a few weeks while we get married and then go on a little honeymoon. And then we'll come back. We'll do the episode tier list. And then I think we wanted to do maybe one or two movie breakdown episodes. And then I think we'll sit down and really kind of figure out where we're going to go from there.
I had a suggestion, and I was going to, this is not for like the next season, because I have my own list and it keeps getting longer of like, oh, we could do this. We could do this. That'll be a different conversation. My worry has been there's going to be a bit of a drop off from, you know, home movies fans. And that, you know, that just happens. You know, every time like a podcast moves on to a different season or a different thing, like that just happens. I don't blame you people. It's okay. That's not the thing I'm trying to talk about. But because there's going to be a bit of a gap, I kind of wanted to give a bit of a pitch for an episode to kind of maybe bring them back for when we come back. But an idea I had is if we had a guest on to host a home movies trivia game. And
you want to step up to trivia?
Yeah, I was just saying, we're going to lose, dude.
Nah, man. I think we can do it. You just like...
You're confident?
Well, Adele, while you bat the eyes, I'll be over here watching the show over and over and over again. But I mean, I think if we study up Adele, we could possibly beat him.
It's true.
He's only human.
I mean, I'd be down, to be honest with you, because I would like to see like what kind of questions there'd be. Like, who would come up with the questions? I would say Craig.
Craig would be a good one.
Yeah, because he's just as obsessed with home movies as Tim is.
That, or like audience members could like also send in.
Or
you,
both.
Yeah, I mean, you could have Craig do it, but also have Craig access to the email so the audience can send in emails and then have Craig go through it. We'd have time for them to do it, and then we could have David host it.
I think that's a good idea. Yeah. I like that idea. I'm even willing to be like, you two versus me.
I feel like that's more fair.
And that way you guys can kind of combine your powers.
Collaborate and listen.
I don't know.
I think that's a really fun idea. And, you know, the Spotify comments, the email, rhmpod@gmail.com, those will always remain open. So any ideas or suggestions, please send them our way. Anticipate, regardless of what happens, there probably being at least a 2-3 week gap while we go get married. So, but then after that, everything will be on the same feed, regardless of what happens. You can, as long as you're subscribed to us on your pod feed, you should be good. And then Rewatching Home Movies, the YouTube channel will be active. I always thought my theory was the episode tier list we would record video and audio of, so we can release it as a YouTube video and as an audio podcast.
Yeah.
Yep.
So
I think that'd be dope.
Just kind of bridge the gap. And then, yeah, I've got some ideas for YouTube videos, but I'd like to do that as well as some the next chapter of the podcast.
Oh, I'm excited.
Yeah. So, and then I guess last but not least, I just want to say to you two, my co-hosts, thank you so much for taking this ride with me. I really appreciate it. I'm very proud of us for making it to the end. And I just appreciate you both so much.
Mm. That's right back at both of you.
Yeah. And, you know, obviously the fans that have reached out or left 5-star reviews, you guys rock. It's always so nice to see and read some positivity out there when it's so, so negative. So we appreciate you guys so much. And yeah, if you can just bear with us for a few weeks, we will be back in one way, shape, or form. So anything else you guys want to add before we GTF on out of here?
Thanks for listening.
I'm Neo. I'm Leo. I'm not.
DZX Cloud?
Yeah. No, I'm just had a great, 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 great time. I'm very excited to see what we do next.
Yeah, same.
Absolutely. And I think I hear a helicopter. So perfect timing to go ahead and wrap this up.
They're coming for me.
Yeah. It's not too far off.
Well, like I said, guys, give us a couple weeks. We will be back. And until then, please just, like, you know, be safe, be smart, take care of each other. And we love you very much.
Yes, we do. Love you.
Bye.
Bye. Marcin, say bye.
Bye.
That's going to do it for this episode of Rewatching Home Movies. And if you made it this far, thank you so much. Whether you listened to this when it came out in October of 2025, or at any point in the future, please feel free to reach out to us at rhmpod@gmail.com and request some free stickers. I want to give a heartfelt thank you to Chris Bongat for both versions of our theme song, to Nick for the current version of our logo, to Jens, Shannon, and Tom, who all did their own iterations of the logo, and a giant thank you to everyone who worked on Home Movies who was willing to talk to me about the show. Thank you so, so much. And last but not least, I want to give the biggest thank you to my co-hosts, Marcin and Adele, for taking this trip with me. I couldn't have done it without you guys. We'll be back in a few weeks when we do a tier list of every single episode. But until then, please, take care of yourselves, take care of each other. We love you so, so much. And thank you for rewatching Home Movies with us.